Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Reserve Pool Podcast, edition 64. I'm the managing editor of thereservepool.com, RJ Retro, and alongside me today we have three esteemed guests who are going to be talking about our topic this week, optimism in Dice Masters. First off, we have the man who started everything that we're doing here today. Well, he didn't create WizKids and the game of Dice Masters, but everything that has to do with the Reserve Pool is pretty much his baby, so I guess that makes us his kids, and he is our father, Dave.
I'm trying to figure out right now how I'm a guest on my show.
Yeah, I guess panelist is a little bit better, isn't it?
Hey, no problem, RJ. I'm just glad that I could join the party.
And it's going to be a party today because we have brought my right-hand man from the Prep Area podcast. We've done a couple of shows together now, and we've always had a blast. And, it's Shadow Meld, also known as Patrick. I'll probably switch between those two names throughout the show. Thanks for coming on as a guest. This is definitely not your show.
No, but don't worry, Dave. I'm a guest on my show, too, so don't worry about it.
How do we feel about the name Shadow Pat?
No, because that feels like I'm patting you in a place where the sun don't shine.
Pat Meld. I don't know.
Yeah, I was going to say Pat O'Meld almost has an awful ring to it, which makes me want to use it.
It makes me feel like I'm a Padawan.
I'm gonna Google that, look it up, and we'll come back and talk about that later. Finally, we do have one more panelist as well. Isaac, he's in the top 20 in the United States of America right now, which makes him the highest ranked thereservepool.com member, however you want to put it. Basically, this is my way of saying he's better than Shadow Meld right now.
I mean, I would never say that, but thank you for saying it for me.
Well, I did get your email that said, hey, can you say this on the podcast? So,
it was all capitalized, so I appreciate you reading it.
Well, you know, caps lock is cruise control for cool.
It's true. Usually I just hold down shift, and that's what makes me so lame. Now, we are excited to talk about a specific topic this week because we are very close to the release of a brand new Dice Masters set. It is the second DC set in Dice Masters. It is War of Light. Now, I know that Shadow Meld and I are not necessarily DC people. I don't know where Isaac is on this, but I know that Dave is a big fan of Booster Gold, and as far as I know, you are probably the one who knows the most about War of Light. What can you tell us about the storyline, I guess, that would be a good introduction to people that are just getting started with War of Light in Dice Masters?
Wow, so where do I even begin with that? War of Light sort of spawned out of a couple of different things. The big thing is that the introduction of the Chromatic Lantern Corps. Now, we, of course, knew about the Green Lanterns and the Yellow Lanterns, which spun off when Sinestro kind of went bad. And the Green Lanterns, you know, they work on will and everything like that. And the Yellow Lanterns work on fear. Now, with the Blackest Night event, we saw Black Lanterns, which were kind of zombie sort of things that happened. And what ultimately saved the day was the introduction of some other lantern corps to the mix. We saw within Brightest Day now the White Lanterns with Hal Jordan sort of blazing a trail there. And from that went War of Light, the War of the Lanterns within the Green Lantern Corps and all of the other ones. So we have the Indigo Tribe, the Star Sapphires, the Red Lanterns, the Orange Lanterns, all sorts of lanterns kind of came out of nowhere. And I will be honest with you, in the comics, this is something that actually sort of lost my interest. This was New 52. Booster got his series canceled. The Justice League International series was not doing so hot. So I kind of actually stopped at that point. But the stuff in the set is really, really cool. So, you know, that's fine. The comic tie-in is something I can't speak to the whole event. I saw the start of it and said, this is a little much with all these cores, but I love how it's going to play out in Dice Masters.
It looks pretty good so far here as we look at the starter set, which has been leaked. We will give you information regarding the actual set itself as it becomes available, so stay tuned to thereservepool.com for that. Now, Isaac, when we look at the starter set here for War of Light, considering that you are right now the highest ranked member, I think it's only fair we let you go first in terms of the unique characters that are in this set. We have the usual eight characters in the starter set. Who jumps out to you as someone that you absolutely want to use?
Absolutely Batman. I love the Batman cards. I love the global attached to it. And I know we've talked when we talk on Vassal late at night about the unblocked being the new big thing. And I love the Batman Bruce Wayne of Earth. If you use a basic action die this turn, Batman cannot be blocked. And I think that's got a great, great synergy in there. He's a total fielding cost of, what is he, 6, I believe? He's a 1-2-3, so he's a little expensive, but to have that unblocked Batman could be a big punch.
And we're big fans of prep as well. He's got the global use one energy or one generic energy. The first time you play a basic action this turn, draw one die and add it to your prep area. So Shadowmeld, we talk all the time about where the meta is going and so forth. Do you agree that that unblocked is going to be the new thing?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Unblocked is going to be pretty spectacular, especially after this new set. Just because there's only a few answers to what do you do to an unblocked character, right? It's distract it or kill it. That's pretty much it. Or take it on the nose. And if you're going in with the plan on having your character take it on the nose, or having your opponent take it on the nose, and you don't mind that your character is going to the use pile, then you're already limiting their options on how to handle an unblockable character. So I definitely agree that Batman, plus there's a Robin that says, hey, if Batman's on the field, Robin's also unblockable. So you're now hitting with the Cape Crusader and the Boy Wonder, and bam, they just took 7. And you do that 2 more times and they're done.
What do you think, Dave?
Well, Pat, you just kind of stole my thunder right there. I was exactly thinking about Robin, Circus Star from the last DC set. 4 shield, Robin is unblockable while your Batman is active. I mean, my goodness, you can really make some things happen here. And we have some really interesting basic actions in this set as well. And of course, in previous sets, but we have some neat stuff we're adding to the mix. Of course, Batman here having that synergy with the basic actions. If you used a basic action die this turn, that's what makes him unblockable. Further, he has a global that the first time you play a basic action this turn, you get to draw a die and add it to your prep area. So, I mean, I think we've seen a continued focus on basic actions probably since D&D, but now with some of the more interesting things that we've been getting, going back to Hulk out, of course, a lot of people are already excited about one that's been spoiled for a while, actually, the
Big Entrance.
Big Entrance, thank you.
Yeah.
The name of it could not make a big entrance in my mind, but we've been excited about those sorts of things. And, you know, certainly more and more happening with those basic actions. And that's a great thing for the game as well.
I'll tell you what, though, RJ, as cool as that Batman is, he's not the character that I want to play around with. I really want to play with Lex Luthor in all 3 of his incarnations. He's a cheap 2-cost villain shield character. And currently, there are very few shield villains that don't cost 4, 5, or 6. And on top of that, this one goes all the way down to 2. And his fielding cost isn't actually that terrible either.
No, it's not.
We're looking at a fielding cost of 0, 1, and 2. I agree with you. Lex Luthor looks really good. We have the 2-cost with no text, the 3-cost shield that says when fielded, gain 2 life. If you have the highest purchased cost die fielded, and another 3-cost shield. And I like this one the best, actually. While Lex Luthor is active, if you have more life than your opponent at the beginning of your turn, you may draw an additional die. That is going to be a lot of fun to mess around with.
Well, that's just it right there. We talk about all the time different ways that we can look for ramp, and some of the previous sets we've been a little bit, you know, scratching our heads in terms of how we're going to accomplish that in set especially. But this Lex Luthor greed from the starter set really, really does give us an opportunity there. That's definitely going to be an exciting card to mess with.
So, Dave, we have to talk about your favorite basic action character here. I know we brought up Batman. We bring up Lex Luthor. What else is there that jumps out to you as a really good character to use?
Well, yeah, I mean, like I said earlier, the Batman, especially in reference to that Robin that we talked about just a few minutes ago, is something that I'm extremely excited about. If I'm allowed to delve into the basic actions, I have to say that I join others in being very pumped about Big Entrance, because I think that's going to be a really, really nifty card for those who love combos, and I am one of those people for sure. Now, in case you have not seen it, if you're living under a rock or something, that is, when purchased, you may add this die to your dice bag. When used, dice purchased this turn cost 1 less than their printed cost, and may be put directly into your dice bag instead of your used pile. That is a really, really neat card. But as excited as people are about that, and Pat, I know you joined me in this one, also excited for Stealth Ops. We talked about how we think unblockable is going to be a thing. Well, target character die is considered to be level 1 and is unblockable this turn. That is really nifty. Anytime something is unblockable, I think you have to turn your head and look at it and give it a hard look.
Don't forget about that global either. Mm-hmm. Pay 2 masks, spend target character die down. You could actually make Adam viable because you can make Adam effectively a level 1 character, even though he's on his 5/5 character face. And there are a couple versions of Adam, but one of them says, hey, he can't be blocked or takes no damage from characters that are higher level than him. So you make him effectively level 1, and you can actually also use the global to spin him down on a turn where you don't have stealth ops, and then spin him back up when you do. Things like that are just, I think that that card gives you a lot of combos with characters like Adam or Giant Man or things like that.
Well, absolutely. Yeah, the 4-cost Adam, the rare from DC Justice League, cannot be blocked when he's at level 1. Yeah, good point by you, Pat.
Personally, I would say right now that Adam is a great little cup character card that you can use to really stop the Overcrush teams, but any basic action that's going to make Adam a little bit more viable and constructed, I will certainly take it. Isaac, let's talk to you here about some of the other basic action cards that you are looking forward to using, the ones that really jump out as something we've never seen before.
Well, the big entrance, obviously, I'm right on board with that. I love the idea. Going back even with what we talked about with the Batman global, or being able to throw it in your bag when you buy it and then using that global for the first time when you use the basic action, I think that's great. But looking through the cards that are in the starter, there's a card in there called Relaxing, basic action card, which says draw a die from your bag, name a die, draw a second die. If the second die was a die you named, keep it and draw a third die. Otherwise, move the second die to your use pile with a double burst of keeping the second one, even if it was incorrect. With the way we can manage what goes into our bag, what we have sitting in that bag at any given time, there's potential for drawing 3, prepping them, and having those dice ready. So I like that if you know what's in your bag and you can put things in there and be ready to pull them out, you've got a pretty good chance of keeping, drawing and keeping 3 dice playing that action.
Yeah, that it doesn't actually prep anything. It's draw and draw and roll them immediately.
Right.
Which is a great way to represent one die being the effect of, like, so at least that die churns to the next dice, right? So you can buy that action die and it either comes up 2 generic energy or it comes up whatever the next die in your bag is and gives you a chance to pull out the die you're really looking for, or at least thin your bag so that the next turn you're guaranteed to get the die you're looking for. And then, hey, if you get lucky, you get double lucky. So yeah, I like it. It's pretty good. I'm not sure how I would compare it to, say, Nasty Plot, because Nasty Plot gives you a larger chunk of guaranteed energy at any one turn, but it's close.
Sure.
It's definitely close.
Now, you wrote an article on the website this week, Patty, regarding basic actions in draft for Age of Ultron. Now, if we're looking at this set, you always talk about Polymorph and Cone of Cold and those basic actions. Do you find anything in this set that is as strong, as interesting?
Well, I haven't seen all the cards in the set, so it's hard to say anything jumps out immediately. I will say in most drafts, I usually want to bring some sort of direct damage or some sort of spin a character up or spin a character down or some way to make a character a villain. And the fact that this set has a global for each of those 3 things on its basic actions makes me really happy. They're expensive globals because Lethal Force has a global that's pay 2 bolts, deal a damage. Stealth Ops has the pay 2 masks, spin a character down. And Monument to Evil has the mask fist, make something a villain. So they're expensive, but I think that's really the way to go in the future for basic actions, is to have the globals on basic actions be a more expensive way to add to your team, because then your opponent really has to go out of their way to get to that global to use it back on you. You know what I mean?
Well, and of course, I'm a big proponent of the direct damage in drafts. Far too many people play drafts very defensively. And now perhaps that's just what they got. They were going for something. It didn't pan out and they put together the best team they could. But in general, if you play defensively in drafts, you're going to lose. The team with more direct damage generally wins drafts, or at least does well in drafts. You can reliably get probably post about a 2-1. And if you can go 2-1 and keep that going across your Dice Masters career, you're doing pretty darn well, and direct damage gets you there. And that's certainly something that we're going to see a lot of as a theme, I think, moving forward with drafts in future sets, not just in this one.
So looking at the starter set as a whole here, is there anything else positive that jumps out to any of you guys that you'd like to bring up right now?
Well, I like the chromatic scale of the artwork. Like, it's War of Light, and all of the cards that are in here are very distinctly a different color, right? There's one that's yellow, one that's red, green, blue. Actually, there's three that are yellow, but one's orange, another one's blue. But the way they're laid out in the starter is you open it up and you go from color to color to color. And I don't know, I guess that's the theme of the set, and I think they picked good artwork to represent those colors, at least from the starter.
I have to say again here with the starter, the artwork, we praise this a lot with Age of Ultron, but I think it's deserving here as well. You can immediately, it's a great portrait of the character, usually in a good action pose. There's no question who it is. And even better, I think in the starter set, we only have one person. Well, no, we have two people smelling their armpits. But still, that's much better than in Age of Ultron. Yes, Hal Jordan and Sinestro, perhaps. Sinestro's not exactly, he doesn't have his nose quite in it, but you can get a whiff there, I'm sure. But the art was very well chosen, and certainly very thematic, just exactly what Patrick said with the use of color. Really fantastic there.
All right, and now that we're looking at maybe the stuff in the set that doesn't live up, does anything jump out to you, whether it be character or basic action, that you definitely will not be putting on your teams?
I don't love Hal Jordan Highball. I think his stats are all right, though perhaps a little lacking for the six costs that we've seen. He's a six mask Green Lantern, of course. While Hal Jordan is active, if you have three or more bolts in your reserve pool at the end of your roll and reroll step, deal one damage to target villain die for each bolt you rolled. I think it's a little bit of removal, but I don't know how much of it is removal that is great. I think it's a little bit overcosted for what you have there. The other ones are five, and the abilities are more interesting, or it brings us a global at least. I'm not sure I'm a huge fan of Highball.
Let's move over to Isaac. What jumps out to you, whether it be character or basic action? What don't you like?
I would agree with the Hal Jordan, but also looking at John Stewart, looking at his cards, they don't really jump out. I love that there's some villain hate. But again, especially if I tend to veer more towards constructed play, for me to play like John Stewart, Indigo Tribe, John Stewart gets +1 attack, +1 defense for each of your opponent's fielded villain character dice. That's going to rely on my opponent to be playing a villain set. So for me, that doesn't have enough variability of play for me to look at that from a constructed end.
Well, and you get a better benefit, essentially, the more that your opponent has out. So you don't have an equivalent benefit for your opponent having a whole bunch of stuff in the field. I mean, +1/+1, all right, maybe if you have a whole bunch of John Stewarts, but what's that really going to get you?
Right. Not enough to be something I would use for, for it to jump out and say, oh yeah, this guy's great.
Yeah.
How about you, Shadow Meld?
Anti-monitor is anti-playable. First of all, I know we're just praising all of the art, but this guy's like 80s Transformer art.
That's pretty much anti-monitor.
Yeah, I don't think he's changed much over the years.
Fair enough. But on top of that, all three of his abilities are just lackluster. He's got a high fielding cost and a stat line that I would expect on a good five cost character and an okay six cost character. And I guess that's what he is. He's an okay six cost character. And his seven cost character, the stat line does not make up for his ability.
5/5, 6/6, 7/7.
Right. Yeah. He gets a targeted KO when he's fielded. And if you successfully, KO a guy, you can prep a villain, but it has to be a Lantern character. So in set, maybe, but like in set, you have to pay for a 7-cost character. It's just, it's too much. Like, I haven't seen the full extent of how much you can prep in this set, but I didn't see a PXG yet. So, you know, it just, he's not doing it for me.
Well, you know, it's interesting with the big characters like that. So you get the big 6-7 cost. I would agree, not playable, but so I have a young son who's going to open this pack. He's going to see the 7 cost, and it's the first thing he's going to pick up and go, look at this big guy. What does he do? Oh, that looks cool, but look at how expensive he is. I want to play him.
I can see that, and I can understand that. And I could probably build a team around him, but it would probably involve infiltrate so that I could infiltrate something just to kill it.
Exactly.
Doesn't
make it a good card, but I can totally see where, you know, somebody's going to, who's, you know, 9 years old is going to look at this and go, but he's a 7-7.
Yeah, he's a 7-7, but you paid 7 for maybe a 7-7. Like, I don't want to pay 7 for a 5-5.
Oh, yeah, I don't.
Ever.
I don't disagree. I'll pay 4 for Batman and get a 6-6.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
Among other things, I'm not huge on with the starter. I think overall it's a pretty strong starter. We have some really interesting cards. I don't even think we mentioned Sinestro here, who has some really nifty abilities that we'll surely discuss more in the future. But did you guys notice that there are no female characters? Is this the first starter we've had where there are no female characters? I believe it might be. The second thing is that not only that, but there aren't females figured prominently on any card except for sort of Vicious Struggle, where you have somebody, I can't tell who that is, kind of struggling with Hal Jordan there. But then also on Relaxing, where you have these two women sort of, is that Guy Gardner?
I can't tell. It is.
They're basically cat women, and he is chillaxing on a luxury planet.
Yeah. There are not any women in the starter set. There are not any female heroes in the starter set. I think certainly that's an interesting choice.
We're definitely going to see some females in the set, so ladies, never fear. And we kind of want to hear from you as well in terms of whether you think that there should be a female character in every starter set, even just for the demographics. Let us know by posting in the comments section at thereservepool.com. We are going to take just a short break here. When we come back, we're going to discuss the power of positivity and some of the controversy that we've seen online recently, whether it be the ruling of some characters, whether it be a Jocasta or something along those lines, or whether it be the fact that there have not been that many rulings at all. And unfortunately, the tough topic as well, and when it comes to errors on some of the cards, just how much of an effect does that have on the game, and are people looking too much into it? We're going to talk about those topics in just a few moments. You are listening to the Reserve Pool Podcast.
Hey folks, Shadowmeld here, talking about the prep area. In case you missed this week's episode, we've got teams left, right, and center, masks, and more masks. And looking forward to next week, we're talking Guardians of the Galaxy. We have our Guardians of the Galaxy economy team, and we also have an evil creation I like to call Swarm Hawk. Come check it out, and always keep listening.
We are back on the Reserve Pool Podcast. I'm RJ Retro, the managing editor of thereservepool.com, and Dave is here as
Hi.
Well. Not a guest. We are here to talk about the positivity in Dice Masters right now, because there has been some there's been some controversy, I guess, online here, and I figure I'll start with you before I bring Isaac and Shadowmeld back on. We have seen the former managing editor step down from Dice Masters, step down from the site as well, based on just how the game is going. And I know we've had some conversations, you and I, regarding some of the negativity online, and I know it was very important to you when TRP started to make sure that we were the positive voice, not to shut down any other forum or any other site, but we wanted to make sure that we were the most positive, and not I don't know how else to put it other than to say we didn't want to see too much fighting, we didn't want to see too much criticism And here we are today where we can't help it because it's out there.
Well, yeah, I would say that what we want to be is the most constructive of them all. I think that's a fair way to put it out there. We've talked about positivity, and of course I had a whole thread on the website entitled Positivity, but I think really what it comes down to is to be the most constructive. It shouldn't be this stinks and forget you all. It should be, I have some issues with this. Here's why. Here's how it could be better. Let's talk about it. Let's see, you know, that's really what it comes down to. I think there's a huge difference between just wanton criticism and just being a overall disagreeable and, you know, being able to be constructive with it. At work with my staff or with my own superiors, I ask, and I myself, I don't just come with a complaint. I come with a couple of potential solutions so they know I'm at least thinking about it, and that I'm not just here to whine. And that's, I think, the big difference here.
Now, Isaac, you're probably the most positive person that there is in Dice Masters, at least in my experiences. You are definitely one person that believes that the game is going well right now. I think it's fair to say you don't necessarily have too many issues with the game as it is. How do you feel about people bringing up the fact that there were quite a few errors in the Age of Ultron set, and there have been some errors on the card? And do you find that it makes it difficult to teach a new person the game? Because that's one of the biggest criticisms I think that we've heard over the last, let's say, month and a half.
So I think getting deep into the game, it becomes a difficult thing. I think if we're teaching somebody the game, basically, that's not the first thing I'm using to point out. And usually there's so much going on that those little things they miss. Now, the deeper they get into the game, the more they can see those mistakes. I tend to be pretty optimistic with the game. I think part of that stems from the scene we're in. We have a pretty positive experience with the friends I play with. I talked to Dave about this recently. I have a built-in play group with myself, my son and daughter, my friend Gene and Jason and their sons, and we go to an event. There's already 7 of us there, and we get 15, 20 people in an event, and we have a really positive experience. So I find that the way the game's going, I'm happy where it's at. I see the mistakes. I acknowledge them. I recognize them. They can be frustrating, but I don't feel like it affects gameplay enough that at the end of the day I'm going, I just can't play this game right now.
We'll bring Shadowmeld into the mix here because on the forums, now that I'm busy doing other things, you have completely taken over in terms of the posts per day, and most of those are either in the strategy forum or they're in the rules forum. So you know firsthand all about the WizKids rulings. How do you feel about the release of the release schedule of the rules as it is right now? Do you think it's good enough, or do you think that it is a major issue and it is worth talking about?
I'm kind of two minds about it. I think that they are doing good work releasing and answering, and you can tell lately that they've gotten more in touch on what they need to answer. It used to be we would go a month or two before we'd get an answer about something that had been a big issue. But they've started answering the most vocal questions, and maybe it's just that, hey, whenever we have a vocal question on the forums, we say, we make a call to action. Hey, go put in a ticket so that we can get that ticket answered. You know what I mean? But my other mind on it is, I hate the rules forum as a mechanic in and of itself. I think that a significant amount of work and effort could be reduced with just a single glossary. And a unified form of card, like a dictionary for card language used by writers. One of my biggest pet peeves on the game in itself is there are 3 different words that we use, especially with War of Light now coming out. There are 3 different words that represent pay 1 mask. There are cards that say pay 1 mask. There are cards that say spend 1 mask, and there's now the new Batman that says use 1 energy. It's 3 words that mean the same thing, and examples of that inconsistency are where other cards get more complicated. Now, everybody knows what those three cards mean, but the fact that they weren't specific about those words is one of the things. But going back around, they're doing a good job of answering the important things. They're responding to the community's requests. Hopefully they'll be able to release a significant glossary in the upcoming sets.
Dave, Shadowmeld brings up a really good point here when it comes to having a glossary, having a dictionary of terms that we can see. That's just going to make it more – it's going to make it easier to understand the cards, because it's unbelievable how much discussion about this game is just about the rulings and just about the wording on the card. Do you feel that that's more of an issue, or is it more the mistakes that are being made in terms of rarity stripes and typos and – I guess other mistakes on the cards? What do you think is the bigger issue that needs to be focused on?
So I think there are two aspects to this. On the one hand, to Pat's point, I think it does have to start with the cards. I think that if you specifically said on a card, active, this happens, you know, global, pay something and this happens, inactive or continue, whatever, continuous on basic actions, which they are now starting to add. If we knew that something was in play even when the die was not active, there would never have been a question about the Super Rare Thanos, for example. But because we don't have language within the game to define that at this point, we don't have it. So I think that any kind of glossary has to begin with a little bit more consistency on the cards. Now, to the other side of that point, I see the issues where there's confusion with the rarity stripes and whatever else and how people feel. Now, in Age of Ultron, of course, those were just commons, not a huge concern. In DC Justice League, we saw a couple of cards that were printed and distributed, it would seem, as rares, given the frequency with which people report getting them. Now, the anecdote the plural of anecdote is not evidence, but it does. We can be reasonably certain that Flash and Constantine are printed on common, are distributed as rares. And I know what I'm trading? In a competitive game, a secondary market is, in a collectible game rather, a secondary market is inevitable and something that you are encouraging, whether actively or tacitly. So you make it harder for players to know what they have. And then to the point about printing on cards, the Star-Lord, for example, with the incorrect energy type, now, that could have been just something that was missed. Maybe he had one energy at one point. They decided something else fit him better thematically. But when you can have errors like that on something that's so fundamental to what a card is, then how do we know that all of the purchase costs are correctly? How do we know that all of the abilities are tuned the way that it was intended right away? It leads to uncertainty, and uncertainty leads to a certain amount of craziness. And if you don't believe me, just look at the stock market the last several weeks.
I agree. One thing to go back to your point on the DC cards, one of the other reasons that there was uncertainty is because the checklist for the actual set listed Constantine and Flash as rares, and that's where people even brought up the question in the first place. So the whole set needs to be checked, basically, copy edited, and I'm sure it is. It's just somewhere appears to be somebody missing or dropping the ball.
Well, I think something probably changed within the last, you know, few days before it went to production, and nobody thought to fix the checklist. I mean, that seems the most logical explanation. I don't know that makes it better or worse, but that in my mind, I imagine that's what happened. True or not, I don't know. But I think before we can get a glossary, we need to see some more consistency in how things are defined on the cards themselves.
Of course, we don't know exactly what goes on with WizKids as a company. We do know that they are a smaller company, and so they don't have a huge staff that can work on all these sets, because, I mean, Dice Masters isn't the only game that they're working on as well. So we don't know what goes on there. It would be pure speculation. But what we do know is that there have been errors made on cards. There have been errata that's been created because some things have not worked the way they were intended to be. I mean, we have comments from one of the creators saying that Imprisoned was originally intended to be working one way, but it's now working a different way. So I guess the focus now, Isaac, is this a big enough problem that WizKids needs to look at right now? Is the errors, Or are the errors something that they need to make sure they can fix, maybe not in time for the next set or even the set after that, but going into the sets in the future?
Well, absolutely. I mean, I think errors have to be corrected.
Is it fair to say that there should be no mistakes in a set, or certain mistakes are unavoidable?
I would imagine that, you know, there is no perfection attained with any type of game. I mean, a lot of us play a fair amount of board games, and there are certain board games that you go, yeah, that's, you know, if you're playing Smash Up, you're going to get the robots. They're going to be a powerhouse in comparison to everything else that you could play. There are some things that are not always perfect. On that note, errors have to be corrected when they can be correctable. Some of the things, like, I love what Patrick's talking about with the use, pay, spend. I mean, I looked at that Batman card today and I thought, wait, use? I don't remember seeing that in the past. And that, like, to me, that, as a casual player, somebody's not going to care about that. But if you want to strengthen the competitive play, you want people to make commitment to this game, I think errors have to be minimized and almost be gone.
And I think that's actually the key there, is what you just said. It's not that the game won't go on. It's not that WizKids won't keep selling the product. It's that you won't get a continuous, consistent, dedicated, massive audience for your product if it doesn't have the consistency to keep the people around. And the errors and the rules and that sort of thing are what disassociate people with their love for the product. It's hard to love something that is noticeably flawed. And the more noticeable the flaws, the harder it is to maintain your affection for it. And so you have to think of it as, yeah, it's a piece of art to release a game. Yeah, it's a piece of science. The science can be different. The science can be flawed. But the appearance of the game needs to be something that someone can love. And the wording and the rules, while they may appear to be a portion of the science, need to also be part of the art.
Well, I think it's also the part where it puts a position that it puts me in, as somebody who at their local store is often acting as a judge. And I think Pat and Isaac, you both have some experience in this arena as well. You have to rule some things on the spot. You're always going to have to make rulings on the spot that might not be perfect, but you do the best that you can with them. But there are some things that you look at it, and it's not that one thing seems more overpowered than another, and so you rule the less overpowered way. It's that you look at them, and you're not actually sure what it means. And that can be very difficult when you're in those sorts of situations. As a judge, you know, you're trying to build your scene and keep it friendly and good. But of course, you also want to be able to play in them. And I know they don't love it when people who are running the events also play. But I think all of us are building our scenes, not just because we want more people to play Dice Masters, but also because we want to play. So it's hard for me to look at that sometimes and make a definitive ruling right on the spot when I can look at the card and it could make equal sense either way, and it's not that one is maybe super powerful and the other's not. That's an easy ruling to make until you hear otherwise. And then it goes a different direction, and it's like, well, all right. You know, it goes a different direction a week later or 2 weeks later, a month later, and, you know, perhaps that decided, you know, the difference between somebody earning pack prizes and not, somebody getting the OP card or not.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, when I was at Worlds on the first qualifying day, there was a ruling that I had a question on how Lord of D Ring worked in regards to taking damage a character or player, and the judge ruled it the way I didn't understand it to work, and in fact what I considered to be wrong, and after the match found out, oh yeah, well, that ruling is actually this way. So ruling was made and then corrected after my match. If I'm playing casual, no big deal. That wasn't casual play. That was a more big deal.
In fact, Isaac actually texted me in the middle of his game to ask me how I would rule on that. And I cited him the the rules forum page and send him the link so that he could bring it up with the judge. And yeah, you still won that one though, right?
Did, yeah. If I had not won that, it might have been a different story. But yeah, I mean, like you said, like if it's casual, I'm playing with my buddy at home, no big deal. If I'm playing an event at OP and like Dave said, I lose a pack or two, a little bigger deal. If I miss qualifying for something that large because of a rule indiscrepancy, that's a big deal. And that may cause me to say, you know what, I can't do this anymore.
And that's coming from someone who actually just missed the qualifiers to begin with. So could you imagine if you had lost that game and you had finished 33rd when the top 32 go on? I mean, that would be incredibly devastating. So here we are, two sides of the coin. Which side are we going to be on, Dave? I mean, you have a side of we're not going to say anything because we don't want to make WizKids mad. But on the other side of the coin, if you don't say something, then those mistakes may continue to happen. So how do you decide which side of the coin we're on?
And that's always the difficult part with it. I think there are a couple of ways to do it. I think for one, the discussions as we've had them have to remain constructive. They absolutely have to. We gain nothing by being at loggerheads with one another, and we gain nothing by simply spewing negativity. There are some other sites out there that are fans of varying companies that we're not going to talk specifics here that openly like criticize and question the worth of this particular company's like national level events. And which if I'm a new player going to that site as a reference because I found it and they're a large site for that game, I'm saying, well, geez, why do I even want to get into this game? I mean, these people are basically saying, don't even bother with playing this game at its highest level because they run it like garbage. That doesn't accomplish anything. I think though that there is a point where things must be said. I think that there are ways, as I said before, being constructive and coming with suggestions and not just complaints. I think that it's reasonable to drop a line. And I think that if enough people say something, they'll know that enough people are there to help. But you must be measured in the way that you say it. And it can't just be, hey, this is bad and you should feel bad. It has to be, you know, suggestions like we just had. Why not say on a card, you know, active, colon, here's the ability. You know, on that Thanos example, would say active, colon, overcrush. And then it would say something like, not continuous because that's already taken up. I don't have a good word for it off the top of my head. I think I've written it down somewhere. But it would have another word, like concurrent, I don't know, that would indicate that the other part of the ability where you put the tokens on every time a villain damages your opponent happens whether the character is active or not. Then we would know. But because that text wasn't there, we had questions. I think if we can be much more precise and leave out ambiguity in the wording, then we're going to be in a much better spot. And I think that's one of the first suggestions that can be made. You know, WizKids may be a small company, but they have the power of designers like Mike Elliott and Eric Lang on here. Mike Elliott having done so much work with Magic the Gathering, Eric Lang being huge with things like the Call of Cthulhu LCG, the new Warhammer LCG, among many, many, many other things. Didn't he work on Magic for a little while too?
I'm not sure. I know Mike did 10 years in Magic the Gathering.
Huge.
And at least like four sets he was product, I don't want to say, like, he was the project lead or something
so
like that.
These guys know what they're doing. They know how to make cards work consistently. And look, mistakes are going to happen. I mean, my goodness, Netrunner, Fantasy Flight has a huge reputation for quality of components and everything else. Netrunner has a card that says, a mechanism in that game deals with subroutines on a card. What's subroutines? That has two S's at the beginning. It's going to happen, those little things. It becomes a question of a pattern. I will say this. Everything that I have seen of War of Light so far that has been spoiled, everything in the starter set and cards that we've had spoiled, I have not noticed a mistake on the cards themselves. I haven't like gone as far as to match up numbering or anything yet with a checklist, but I have not seen mistakes on the cards themselves, which is a very good start.
A positive sign for sure. So two more questions for the three of you here. First off, you mentioned dropping a line, being polite, being constructive. Do you guys think there is anything else that the community can do to help WizKids out to ensure that the sets that are being released have minimal mistakes and are of a certain quality? Is there something the community can do? starting with you, Dave.
I was hoping you were going to have me go last. I don't know beyond that. We don't have a lot of control over the game. They release it and we buy it or we don't. I would say that if it is truly at a point for you where you're questioning your enjoyment, it's got to be fun. And you have to make that choice for yourself, whether or not you want to continue buying something based on the amount of fun that you have. If that's a choice you make, so much the better. I like the game. I think it's a lot of fun and I'm continuing to have fun. So that is what it is. But I mean, there is a point where that can be effective, but I think that we have enough new players coming and that might not speak with the volume that you'd want. You're much better off trying to work from the inside to help make something better rather than stand outside and take pot shots at it.
Isaac?
No, I totally agree. I think if we have concerns with the way things are being written, the way things are being presented, with questions about errors, then I think the least productive thing is to get on Facebook and, you know, shout from the rooftops how much you hate the game or hate this or that. I mean, the most productive thing you can do is go online and say, you know, hey, WizKids, I love your game. I love the community. I've got all these people that play it and love it. I want to see it do well. And these are the things that I think could be improved. And on the second part of that is, how can I help? Is there any way I could help? And the answer may be no, but by putting ourselves out there to say, I love this game, I'm hopelessly optimistic that this will do well. I mean, I'm a Detroit Lions fan. I'm a hopeless optimistic guy. And so
sure are.
I want to see this do well. And kind of like what Dave said a minute ago too, it's a game and it's meant to be fun. At its core, that's the whole of this. And if you're not having fun with it, maybe you should walk away from it. But I'd hope that the majority of people listening to this that enjoy this know that at its core, this is a fun game. I don't think we'd take the time with this if we didn't have fun doing it.
Shadowmeld, follow up that.
Hey, so if you have a problem with something specific, take it to the rules forum. If you have a question, take it to the rules forum. The more rules forum posts they get, the more overwhelmed they'll feel. I mean, the more they'll answer the question that you want. but yeah, just find a way to tell them. Even if you just write a rules forum post and say, hey, I think this is an issue, it's going to at least get in front of somebody. And then on top of that, people love this game. You know how we know? We just posted an article about how Age of Ultron beat out Diamond Distributors sales for Origins 2015, which is, by the way, the last core set for Magic ever, from what I hear. So that's going to be the last basically basic game for Magic, and Age of Ultron beat that out. So, I mean, what can you say? People love the game. People are buying the game. More people every day are buying the game. If you want to get through to them, not buying the game isn't going to bother them. What's going to help is write a letter, write a post, talk to somebody, and get it to WizKids somehow. You know, respond to them on Twitter, but be constructive. Don't flame. Don't go crazy about it. Just say, hey, when are we going to get this rules clarified, or post on the Wars Forum? Be active, be concise, and be positive, and your game will become what you help them develop to be.
Just going
to
throw this out there as well. If you are going to be tweeting at them, don't say hey, because that's a waste of 5 characters, assuming you use the period and the space, which you should, because I think grammar is also incredibly important, regardless of who you are ever contacting on Twitter. That's a little bit of a pet peeve of mine. We'll move on here. As we sort of end this episode, I did say I had 2 questions left. I was not excited for War of Light until I saw the starter set. I've waited months because I don't read a lot of DC. I don't watch a lot of DC movie franchise, blah, 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 whatever. I'm not a DC guy. After seeing the starter set, I am incredibly intrigued, and I'm definitely going to be picking the set up. When I ask you three here first, and I'll let Dave go last this time here. We'll start with Shadowmeld. How do you feel about War of Light, the little bit that we've seen so far, and how do you feel about where the game is going?
So I come from a store that plays in set more than it plays unlimited. In fact, we haven't had a constructed unlimited tournament yet. And so far, we've been playing in-set Marvel almost exclusively. It will be so nice now that we have enough DC cards that I can play some other in-set format than just Marvel. And so I'm excited to have more DC cards, more DC characters to expand and play that new format of DC only.
Isaac?
Yeah, DC is not my favorite. I mean, I'm a big Marvel guy. I cannot wait for Spider-Man. I am so excited about that set. That being said, I am just excited to have a new Dice Masters set. I remember listening to Reserve Pool episodes in the past where it was slap whatever you want on the card, I will buy it. I am at that point. I do not know anything about Yu-Gi-Oh!, but I've got these cards. And there are times where I look at him and go, I have no idea what that character is, nor do I want to know, but I'm excited to have the card. I love the idea that we've got another set coming. I like the things we've already seen from the starter. I'm excited about some of the leaks we've seen. There are some cards that, exact opposite of what Patrick said, we play almost... there's a mix. I prefer to play constructed events. And when we have a lot of variety stuff, whether it's Little Cup, whether it's two huge feuds, whether it's a mixture, four actions, four characters. I love that we've got a whole nother group of stuff to pick from and can really have some fun with some new characters and actions.
Yeah, when we talk about sets coming up right now, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles is so high up on my list. I assume it's going to be quite a few months before we actually get that set, but my goodness, I cannot wait for it. Same thing with Spider-Man. I think War of Light's going to be good. Dave, you're obviously the more DC guy of the four of us here. Now that you've seen a little bit more of War of Light, how do you feel?
Well, first let me say to you people who are like, I'm not so much DC, I love the Marvel, you've been spoiled, okay? Let's get that out of the way right now. I am much more of a DC fan, and I had to deal with this game starting with Marvel. I didn't get DC until earlier this year. Now, I mean, I'm cool with D&D, Yu-Gi-Oh!, not an IP I love, but the cards are cool, that's fine. But, so, you're spoiled, you have no idea what you're talking about. That said, one thing that excites me about this set in general is the fact that we still have some new and interesting ideas happening. From the leaked checklist that we can reference here, let me just cite to you super rare number 135, Lantern Battery Power Source. Yes, we have a non-basic action card that is a super rare. I can't wait to see it.
I think that is such a cool thing that they've added. I am not a fan of the 8 super rares in a set. However, if it is going to allow for more interesting cards to be released, I think it's an evil that I can learn to live with. So as I say, War of Light, we are getting very close to that being released. I'm excited for it. All of us are excited for this set. And I think that you can count us among those that are very optimistic as to where this game is going. I don't know about you guys, but as frustrated as I get with some of the rules and some of the mistakes that get made, I love the community, I love the game, and at this moment in time, I can't see myself going anywhere.
I fully agree. And as much as the community, we love it, and we love, you know, the game, I just got to point this out since you brought up the checklist. I'm pretty sure, like 99.99% positive, that the company is listening to us. A lot of people said they hated the chase rares because it was one other thing to collect. It got in the way. It affected the market, all that sort of thing. From everything we've seen, including that checklist, there does not appear to be any chase rares in this set.
No, we have these special Black Lanterns, but there is no indication that there are chase versions of those Black Lanterns.
So that's pretty much all the time we have for this week, but I want to give you guys each an opportunity to say something about the optimism regarding this game or the lack of it. We'll start with Isaac, the most positive person in the world.
I appreciate the title. So getting into this game, it started as a very casual thing for me. It eventually moved to competitive. The thing that stood out to me by far the most, going to Origins, playing with the people at a world level, playing with with the people in this community that I've met in my local scene in Toledo. I mean, I've gotten to make some really good friends, some people that I really love playing with. The community, and I know this gets said a lot, but the community is what drives this game. It's what continues to drive this game for me. I could sit here and play this with my kids at home fine, but there's a reason that I go out and play these OP events, because I love the people that play this game. If you're going to play this game, drive positive aspects in your community. Don't be the one who goes in and shouts from the rooftops how much you hate it. Drive the community and make it the positive experience that is going to make the game fun. And if you have people having fun, you are going to have fun.
Shadowmeld?
I completely agree. The most important factor is have fun. And, you know, build the community. It's no secret at my local community, like at my local games, I'm the guy to beat. And I lost my first draft a week or so ago, and my opponent just sat across from me, had this blank stare on her face, and she was like, wait, what? Because she was in such shock that she actually won the draft, and she had so much fun, and I'm pretty sure she was really proud, and she just loved it. And I had fun knowing that after 3 months of playing with all these guys and helping them learn to build this way or play that way, that it had started clicking for people, and I had fun losing. And that is when you know you're having a good time with good people and in a good community and playing a fun game.
Unless you're me and you're just used to it by this point in the game's lifetime. But Dave, we'll give you the final word on this optimism topic.
Yeah, I can't disagree at all with what's been said here. You know, Pat, I have a very similar situation at my store, though unfortunately with family things that have come up, and some unfortunate things too, some sad things, as well as vacations. I haven't been able to make it to the store in a while, but I had people refer to me as the end boss. I'm like the M. Bison of the store and so forth. And as a result, it's been cool to see the level of play elevate from event to event as they see what is possible within the game. You start to see some innovation that maybe, you know, because they're coming at it from a very different angle than we are, looking at it so often, talking about it so often on a very macro level. It's really just neat to see what people come up with. And it's kind of cool to see the people who were just kind of starting off start to get some wins and everything like that against you, because, you know, that means they're learning and they're invested and they're buying in. And now they kind of have an indication that they've done it. Not that I'm a perfect player. I make plenty of errors and I need to tighten some things up, especially being a little out of practice. But that's a really cool aspect as well. I think I would just like to see more publicity and more evidence of some of those larger scale events. That's what I get up for. I go to the store. I got a decent sized group of 15 to 20 people, though a couple of the recent events have been smaller because of vacations. We have a decent sized group who will play here. And we even get some of the folks from West Virginia come up, and I'm talking Shruby, Melissa, Dane, Jared, et cetera. But I want to play some of the big stuff. It gets a little old playing against the same people all the time, not just for me, for them too, I'm sure. There was one guy last time who said, next time, can I be in the draft pod that doesn't have Dave in it? Because he plays me all the time. He's been getting like closer and closer and closer. He hasn't quite beat me yet. And he's so good. He gets some of the worst roles ever when he plays against me. It's not his fault at all. I want some more big events. I want to kind of get out there and get going at those things, whether through coverage or through playing. That's what I want to get up for.
I think it's fair to say the four of us certainly have a lot of optimism in Dice Masters moving forward. Hopefully you will be along for the ride with us. So on behalf of Dave, who started this whole thing, Isaac, who needs that vacuum in the background because that's what gives him his cool abilities. I'm not even joking. That is why that vacuum is there. And also Shadowmeld, my right-hand man. We are going to be back here. Just to give you a little bit of a heads up, for the record, I'm RJ Retro, the managing editor of thereservepool.com. And as of tomorrow, we are going to be having a new article from Isaac here, who's going to be helping you transition from the kitchen table to the big events, whether it be Worlds, US Nats, or whatever. Isaac's going to help you get there. And on Saturday, we are going to be debuting in the field. And if you've been around for a while, you may think, oh, your interview show that you teased about 80 years ago? Not at all. We are going to be bringing Dylan back into the fold here as we start airing more Dice Masters games on the site through the Vassal program. So be tuning in for that on Saturday. Lots coming up. We'll tee up next week as well on Sunday. So much happening on thereservepool.com. You will not want to miss it. Again, on behalf of everyone here, thanks for listening. We will be back with another podcast next Thursday. Bye for now.
Later.
I knew that was coming.
Bye.
I knew that was coming.